So now I ask you to give your undivided attention to our brother Roger Lewis from the Christ Church North New Zealand Ecclesia. His presentation this evening is entitled Learning to Respond Wisely to Trial, the Story of Simeon and Levi. Brother Roger.
Well, thank you, Brother Larry, and good evening, my dear brothers and sisters in our Lord Jesus Christ and my dear young people. So tonight, our title is Learning How to Respond Wisely to Trial. And our story is going to be taken from, in fact, this story in Genesis 49 concerning these two particular sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi. Because I think that one of the burning questions of this little story in the book of Genesis is this. Why was it, do you think, that Simeon and Levi were blessed together? Because you see what Genesis 49 says. Come and have a look at the record in verse 1. It says in Genesis 49, and Jacob called his sons and said, gather yourselves together that I may tell you that which shall befall you in the last days. Gather yourselves together and hear, ye sons of Jacob. And so all the sons gathered that one by one their father might make known unto them their destiny according to the spirit of prophecy. And you notice at the end of the story of the blessings, it says in Genesis 49 and verse 28 these words. It says, all these are the 12 tribes of Israel, and this is it that their father spake unto them and blessed them. Every one according to his blessing, he blessed them. Every one according to his blessing. But two boys were not blessed one by one. Two boys were blessed together. And it's these two in Genesis 49, verses 5 to 7, Simeon and Levi. And the question is, why were these two combined, do you think, in the story of the blessing of their father? And what might we learn from that strange anomaly in the text? Certainly what we do understand is that Jacob knew things. The Spirit had revealed unto him things that lay ahead of time and certainly ahead of his own impending death. And so what he says to these two boys is in the context of what he saw ahead by the Spirit of God. And he said this in Genesis 49 and verse 5. He said, Simeon and Levi are brethren. Now why does he call them brethren? Because, well, we know they were, but then all the 12 sons of Jacob were brethren, were they not? And in fact, as far as these two were concerned, Simeon and Levi were both sons of Leah and Jacob, and so they definitely were brethren. But then so also were Reuben and Judah and Issachar and Zebulun. They also were brethren, being sons of Jacob and sons of Levi. But only these two are called brethren. And only these two are joined together in a way that Jacob addresses their spirit and their destiny with one single prophecy. And what a strange, strange blessing this would prove to be, because by the time it was finished, it would say in verse 7, cursed be their anger. It reads more like a curse than a blessing, which in fact we believe it was. Well, come back to Genesis chapter 29, and let's just see the story of the birth of the children, because there's a little bit of contextual setting here for how the story of this family, and perhaps these two sons in particular, is unfolded in the divine narrative. So Genesis chapter 29 tells us this. At the end of the chapter, it says that Leah, verse 32, did indeed have a son, and her firstborn son, it says, was Reuben. And then she had another son, verse 33, and called him Simeon. And then a third son, verse 34, called Levi. And then a fourth son, verse 35, called Judah. But she had more children than that, because verse 17 of chapter 30 says that Leah had a fifth son. And the fifth son was called Issachar. And then a sixth son, verse 20, called Zebulun. And after those boys, it says in verse 21, and afterwards she bare a daughter and called her name Dinah. And it's interesting that immediately after the birth of Dinah, the record says in verse 22 that God remembered Rachel. And God hearkened to her and opened her womb, and she conceived and bare a son, and said, God hath taken away my reproach, and she called his name Joseph. And so the record would seem to suggest that Dinah and Joseph were probably born quite close to each other, because the birth of Joseph follows hard on the record after the birth of Dinah. They might have been only 2 to 3 years apart, and that has some bearing on the stories that follow. Now, if you come to Genesis chapter 34, notice this then concerning the story of the sons of Jacob. You might remember this. It's concerning Dinah, actually. She went out to see, you might remember, the daughters of the land. And the record says in Genesis 34 that there had to be arrangements made concerning a possible marriage. And verse 13 of Genesis 34 says, "And the sons of Jacob answered Shechem and Hamor his father deceitfully, because he had defiled Dinah their sister. And they said, 'We cannot do this thing, we cannot marry uncircumcised, but if you will consent to be circumcised, then we will join with you.' The sons of Jacob answered deceitfully," verse 13. But it wasn't all the sons who answered deceitfully. There were only two boys who were in this matter of deception. Only two sons who were the real ringleaders of this trickery. And we know that because verse 25 of this chapter says that immediately after those of the city had been circumcised, it came to pass on the third day when they were sore that two of the sons of Jacob, not all of them, just two. And which two? Why? Simeon and Levi. Dinah's brethren took each man his sword and came upon the city boldly and slew all the males. They slew Hamor and Shechem his son with the edge of the sword and took Dinah out of Shechem's house and went out. And the sons of Jacob came upon the slain and spoiled the city. It was Simeon and Levi who led this matter, not all the other sons. And Jacob, their father, remonstrates with them in verse 30 when he says to Simeon and Levi, "Ye have troubled me to make me stink among the inhabitants of the land." And these boys, these two sons, they answered their father disrespectfully in verse 31. They said, "Should he deal with our sister as with an harlot?" So you see, these two were the instigators of violence. And they used their swords, it says. They took their swords. And they didn't agree with their father. They were vigorous and violent, or they were brethren all right, but they were brethren in evil. And that takes us to Genesis chapter 37, which, although 2 or 3 chapters later on, we believe was probably quite close in timing to Genesis 34 and the matter of Dinah at the city of Shechem. Because, do you notice in Genesis 37, we will be told concerning Joseph in verse 2 that he is, about 17 years old. I think that Dinah was probably of roughly similar age when she went out to see the daughters of the land, a couple of chapters earlier on. So I think the episode of Genesis 34 and the incident of Genesis 37 are probably quite close together in timing, you see. And so now Joseph is 17, and we're told, aren't we, that he went to visit his brethren concerning the matter of where they might be shepherding in accordance with his father's wishes. And what does it say? Verse 18, "And when they saw him afar off, even before he came near unto them, they conspired against him to slay him. And they said one to another, 'Behold, this dreamer cometh. Come now, therefore, and let us slay him and cast him into some pit.'" Now, here's an interesting quotation from the Targum of Jonathan, which is a Jewish commentary on the story of Genesis chapter 37. And this is what this commentary says. It says, "They saw him afar off before he had come nigh to them and plotted against him to kill him. And Simeon and Levi, who were brothers in council, said each man to his brother, 'Behold, this master of dreams cometh. And now come, let us kill him and throw him into one of the pits and say that an evil beast hath devoured him, and we will see what will be the interpretation of his dreams.'" So whereas the Authorized Version says that when they, the brothers, saw him, they said, "Let us slay him," the Targum of Jonathan says, well, actually it was Simeon and Levi amongst all the brothers that led that suggestion that Joseph be slain. Now, why do you think the Targum would single out Simeon and Levi as the instigators in this matter in Genesis 37? Well, perhaps because they've already indicated their forceful character in Genesis chapter 34. In fact, do you notice where they are in this chapter and in this incident? Verse 12. his brethren went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. But wasn't that the city they had just destroyed in chapter 34? And here they are, feeding their father's flock in that very place where Jacob was anxious about reprisals. And I suggest the reason why they were in Shechem was to continue to assert their domination of this area, in which case we can be assured that Simeon and Levi were not only dominant but fierce, and given that they were right back in that region, they probably had their swords with them, don't you think? So that when they said in verse 18 and 19 and 20, come and let us slay him, they could have whipped out their swords and they could have dispatched Joseph then and there had they chosen to do so. Now think about the logic of what the Targum says. Why might it say Simeon and Levi? Well, do you remember the order of the brethren? Who was the firstborn son? Reuben. But this wasn't Reuben's suggestion, verse 21. And Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands and said, let us not kill him. So it wasn't Reuben's idea to slay Joseph, was it? So how did the sons go? Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah. But it wasn't Judah's idea. Verse 26, Judah said unto his brethren, what profit is it if we slay our brother and conceal his blood? Now it wasn't Reuben's and it wasn't Judah's. Well, the two oldest boys and the hierarchy of the brothers in between those two were Simeon and Levi. It most probably was them. They were the most senior in authority. And we've already seen the spirit of these two lads in the record. And that brings us back to Genesis chapter 49. Because I believe, brothers and sisters, that by the time Jacob uttered this prophecy in Genesis 49, which of course you must realize is way, way later in the story, he already knew what had happened concerning his son Joseph. And he knew full well that Simeon and Levi had indeed been involved in the horrors perpetrated upon Joseph when he was sold into slavery. So you see what Genesis 49 says. Verse 5 again, Simeon and Levi are brethren, and then you might notice the margin, their swords are weapons of violence. And those swords had flashed against the city of Shechem in chapter 34. Those swords had been threatened against Joseph in chapter 37. Oh yes, these brothers. And verse 6 says, O my soul, says Jacob, come not thou into their secret, and unto their assembly mine honour, be not thou united. And Jacob, as it were, recoils in horror from the dark deeds of these two sons, and he sets himself apart from their plotting. It's nothing to do with me, he says, cries Jacob. Let me be counted as separate from the plots of these two sons of mine. For, verse 6, in their anger, they slew a man, and in their self-will, they digged down a wall. Now, do you notice that the margin says in verse 6, in their anger, they slew a man, and in their self-will, they hoffed oxen. Now, I think actually the word hoffed, if I'm correct, comes from the Scottish. It's to hoff an ox is to, of course, hamstring the tendons at the back of the hind legs of the animal so as to lame the animal so that it cannot walk. So this is what it means when it talks about hoffing an ox. Now the question is, which one's right? The authorized version or the marginal? Well, let me show you the difference between the two because it's ever so subtle, but it does make a difference. And I think we can draw a conclusion as to which of these two translations we ought to prefer. The King James Version in the main text has digged down a wall, and it's based upon the Hebrew word shur. And in the Hebrew writing of that, there's a cholem above the vav, which is this letter in the middle. There's a little dot right above the vav in the middle. And if you put that dot over the top of that vav, then that becomes shur. And that's what's found in the Latin Vulgate and in the Targums of the Jewish writers and also in the Arabic text. So put the little dot above the vav and it means dig down a wall. But the strange thing is if you take that little dot and put it at the bottom of the vav, it changes the word and now it's the word sure, not sure. You notice how delicate and subtle the difference is. So subtle that we might not even pick it up. That little dot goes from the top to the bottom, but now it's a different word, and now the word means ox. And that is actually what the Masoretic text shows, the actual Hebrew text. It's followed by the Septuagint, by the Samaritan, by Tyndale's, Green's ASV, and a number of other translations. And the other interesting thing about this is that in the Masoretic text, as pointed on every other single occasion that word is found anywhere in the Bible, it is always translated ox. I think it means ox here. I think the rendering is that they hoffed an ox. Oh, and one other interesting thing. Do you notice that the margin says that they hoffed oxen, but that's not right. Because in the Hebrew, it's in the singular. It's just one singular ox. One single bullock. They slew a man. They hoffed one ox. Now, do you notice that Jacob doesn't mention in his prophecy who they hoffed? But I think we know. Because, you see, if you come to the prophecy of Deuteronomy in chapter 33, and to the later story of Moses' own blessing upon the tribes at the end of the wilderness wanderings, Moses says this concerning the household of Joseph in Deuteronomy 33. Verse 17, concerning Joseph, he says these words. Deuteronomy 33, verse 17, his glory is like the firstling of his bullock, and his horns are like the horns of unicorns. Now, the New International Version translates that wording as follows, when it says, in majesty, he, Joseph, is like a firstborn bull, and his horns are the horns of a wild ox. In fact, that word bullock in Deuteronomy 33 and verse 17, the word bullock is why? The very same word translated ox in Genesis chapter 49. Who do you think the ox was that these boys, Simeon and Levi, hoffed? It was their brother Joseph. And Joseph will be known as the ox, the firstling ox in Deuteronomy here, chapter 33 and verse 17. The firstling, of course, was an ox that always belonged to Yahweh as a sacrificial offering. And so Joseph was the ox that these boys hoffed. They didn't slay him, but they destroyed his work and his role in the family because of envy. They crippled his status as the effective firstborn son by selling him into captivity. And now we know why the Targum described Simeon and Levi as the ringleaders in the plot against Joseph in Genesis 37, because they were, and by the time Jacob uttered his prophecy, he knew they were. So come back to Genesis 49 again, and let's just finish that story off before we move onwards in the record. So Genesis 49 says in verse 7, cursed be their anger, for it was fierce, and their wrath, for it was cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. Do you know there's a lesson here concerning friendships, isn't there? That some friendships bring out the worst in others. Some friendships prove not to be helpful friendships at all. The diaglot, in translating the 1st of Corinthians 15 and verse 33, says, be not deceived, evil companions corrupt virtuous habits. And these two boys corrupted each other. They were not good for each other. And so Jacob's prophecy predicted two things. Do you notice? He says they would be divided and scattered so that their combined cruelty might never be brought together again to slay a man or hoff an ox. Now, the interesting thing is that that's the prophecy we're going to follow through in Scripture tonight, because that prophecy was going to be fulfilled in astonishing detail. But in seeing its fulfillment, we're going to have the lesson of our study tonight. And the lesson is this, brothers and sisters, that whatever comes upon us in life, whether good or evil, whether blessing or cursing, our response will totally affect the outcome. We can choose to bow before God and submit to His chastening hand, or we can deny the truth and refuse to change and pursue our own opinions. We're free to choose, of course, But with the principle of free will comes also the law of consequences. And the law of consequences is infallible and inescapable for every choice in life that we make. So let's see how it worked out in the story of these two boys, shall we? I will scatter them in Israel. I will divide them in Jacob. Well, first the scattering, brothers and sisters. If you come back to Deuteronomy chapter 33, notice now Moses' comments upon, in fact, now I've jumped myself a little bit here, brothers and sisters. In fact, I'm sure I have. In Exodus 32, at the start of the wilderness wanderings, you might remember that there's an episode here in which, right at the beginning of when they first left Egypt, there was a matter of apostasy amongst the nation. And we're told in Exodus 32, you might remember in verse 6, when the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play, that verse 25 says that when Moses returned from the mountain, it says, when Moses saw that the people were naked, for Aaron had made them naked unto their shame among their enemies, Moses stood in the gate of the camp and said, who is on Yahweh's side? Let him come unto me. And all the sons of Levi gathered themselves together unto him. And he said unto them, thus saith Yahweh Elohim of Israel, put every man his sword by his side, and go in and out from gate to gate throughout the camp, and slay every man his brother. Verse 29, for Moses had said, consecrate yourselves today to Yahweh, even every man upon his son and upon his brother, that he may bestow upon you a blessing this day. And on the day of Exodus 32, brothers and sisters, men of Levi drew sword against men of Simeon. And all because of the truth. These two brothers would be divided in the matter of this episode. In fact, you might know that as a result of this incident in Exodus 32, that Levi would be appointed to the priesthood, and they would be made separate from the other tribes because of their dedication to God. Because you see, in standing for Yahweh on this occasion, they declared that they would no longer be brother to Simeon in acts of evil or wickedness or violence. They stood for God, and Levi made choice. And that choice divided these two sons into, as it were, different directions in life. Levi had drawn sword, but this time not in anger and not in violence, but in executing the righteous judgments of Almighty God himself. And just as there was an incident at the start of the wilderness wanderings where Simeon and Levi would seem to be divided between them, so at the end of the story, just before they enter the promised land, there would be another episode where these two brothers would be brought into prominence. It's in Numbers chapter 25, and you'll remember the story of Phinehas at the time that Israel abode and were with the daughters of Moab. And the record says in Numbers chapter 25 that there was a terrible catastrophe. And that catastrophe resulted in, as verse 9 says of Numbers 25, those that died in the plague on this occasion were 24,000. And what stopped the plague? Why, the action of Phinehas. Do you remember? And so the record says, verse 11, Yahweh spake unto Moses and said, Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest of the tribe of Levi, which I'm adding in, of course, just to make the point that that's who he was. He's of the tribe of Levi. He's a man of Levi. He has turned away my wrath from the children of Israel while he was zealous for my sake, and therefore I give unto him a covenant of peace. So a man of Levi stood up and acted for God, stood for God, did what was right in terms of the staying of the plague. Now, do you remember who Phinehas drew his javelin against? Well, the record tells us, verse 14, now the name of the Israelite that was slain, even that was slain with the Midianitess woman, was Zimri, the son of Salu, a prince of a chief house among the Simeonites. Ah, so a man of Levi slew a man of Simeon. I will divide them in Jacob. And so this intense spirit that Phineas showed, that once was manifested in acts of violence, had now been subdued and transformed into the spirit of earnest dedication to God's service. Levi was changed as a tribe. They were heading in a different direction. Not so with Simeon. They were leaders of this apostasy. Not just through Zimri, but the whole tribe. And I think we can have reasonable cause to believe that the plague of 24,000 in verse 9, which decimated the whole nation, probably affected this tribe more than any other. In fact, have a look at this. You see, here's the numbering of Israel at the start of the wilderness journey and at the end. You see the numbers? 603,000 at the start of the wilderness wanderings, 601,000 at the end. Not a lot of change, really, is there? But have a look at this tribe. Which tribe was the most decimated by the plagues and the disasters? And the answer is the tribe of Simeon. You see, their father's words had come true. These two tribes were divided, completely divided, before they even entered the land. And what that division really showed is that one tribe still showed the spirit of Simeon, their father, whilst the other tribe, Jacob, had by their very faithfulness turned God's curse into a blessing. How we choose to respond changes outcome. But Jacob hadn't just said, had he, I will divide them in Jacob. He'd also said, I will scatter them in Israel. And you know, that was going to happen as well. Because if you come to Deuteronomy chapter 33, as I mentioned earlier, in the blessing of Moses upon the tribes, do you notice now what it says concerning the destiny of Levi in the blessing of Moses? Deuteronomy 33 verse 8 says, and of Levi he said, let thy Thummim and thy Urim be with thy Holy One, whom thou didst prove at Massah, and with whom thou didst strive at the waters of Meribah, who said unto his father and to his mother, I have not seen him, neither did he acknowledge his brethren, nor knew his own children. For they, Levi, have observed thy word and kept thy covenant, and they shall teach Jacob thy judgments and Israel thy law. And so Levi, scattered in Israel, used that very scattering to teach Jacob God's judgment and Israel God's laws. And so a spiritual response brought about a dramatically different outcome. In fact, you might remember in Numbers 35, which we shan't turn up, the Levites were given cities. How many cities were the Levites given? Why? 48 of them. And where were they? They were scattered through all the tribes. And the tribe of Levi was scattered through the tribes. But it turned out to be an enormous blessing, did it not? Because what really was scattered were the teaching priests of the Levites into every place, into every corner, that God's laws and God's judgments might be expounded faithfully throughout the nation as a whole. And that scattering for Levi turned out to be a blessing both for them and for the nation. It was a mark of honor that they were scattered amongst the tribes in the Levitical cities. Not so with Simeon. Their scattering was different. Theirs, we believe, was the outworking of Jacob's curse, and it appears that they did not learn, did not repent, did not change. In fact, they were so decimated by the results of the plague and by other things that happened in the wilderness wanderings, that in fact, when Moses records his blessing upon the tribes in Deuteronomy chapter 33, you'll search in vain for any comment on Simeon at all, because Moses doesn't even mention them.